You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell, guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Georgina Emerson, and she's founder and CEO of Teach About Women. Georgina, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Adam. Great to be here.
All right, Georgina. So we got a lot to talk about. So you have an upcoming book. We're going to talk about Teach About Women. I mean, we have a lot to cover. But first off, I just want to congratulate you. I understand you just got married.
I did. Yes. I just got married to the wonderful Dr. Shana Caro. And she made me move to Texas from New York. But other than that, she's pretty great.
Oh, my gosh. She must be amazing. She got you to leave New York for Texas. I love Texas, too. But to get somebody out of New York's not easy.
It's not, but she was worth it.
Amazing. Well, hey, I just want to say congratulations to both you and her. I mean, amazing. And obviously wish you the best. Had to get that said. And now let's get into how we start all our shows. So with our Mission Matters Minute. So Georgina, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. So that's our mission. Georgina, what mission matters to you?
Okay. So my mission is to use history to change the way that power looks in your mind, especially in terms of gender. Because gender shapes power, and power goes right back and shapes gender. And the qualities we associate with power aren't natural or rooted in biology, as if like some of us are born with uteruses and some of us are born with leadership skills. It's much more complicated than that. And it always has been. So my book is called Women, Gender, and Power, A New Global History. And in it, I argue that by looking to history, we can figure out how that relationship has shifted and changed over the years and begin to build a world where gender and power aren't so closely tied.
Oh my gosh, Georgina. So always love talking about you. I mean, the comparison, or it's just when you put it that way, some of us aren't born with uteruses and others are born with leadership skills. Doesn't work that way. I can't agree with you more. And we'll go further into your book. I do want to go much more further into that and kind of what inspired it. But before that, like, how did you get started really on this journey and on this path?
That's a great question. We were talking earlier about right after college, I was living in Paris for 4 years as a poet in an attic. So it's been quite a journey to get here. But I taught high school for a long time, for about 8 or so years. And during that time, I fell into teaching a feminisms course. Wow. And one day I saw that one of my favorite writers, Mary Beard, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she writes big, thick books like this one. It's called SPQR, and it's a history of Rome, and I used to use it to teach with. And I thought, and you know, I saw that she was coming out with a new book called Women in Power, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I'm going to use it to guide my entire curriculum. I'm going to change the way I teach because we need more about women in power in history classrooms. And then it arrived, and here it is.
Wow.
And it's like the size of like a large card.
I see. So, you're like, really? I'm expecting a tome. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, and of course, it's not a history of women in power. It's a call to action. So I kind of started thinking, I started looking through my curriculum. I started looking through state guidelines for teaching. Mm-hmm. And I found that on average, kids graduate from high school having heard the names of 10 women in total in their history classrooms, 9th through 12th grade.
Really?
No mention of women or gender or race or any factors that work against women in pay equality in any of the finance and economics courses or the courses on civic participation, which is voting. So,
Yeah, obviously that's a pretty horrific stat, right? Like I believe you, of course, but I mean, even if the numbers are off and it's 20, like, are you kidding me? Like entire books, like even if it's off and it's 30 and your entirety of high school and all of those classes, that's not even one per month.
Right. And when we think about what messages then we're sending to young people about what power looks like and how it works in the world, we're sort of teaching them that women's absence is just kind of a given, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to actually teach them to question women's absence. You know, if you see a picture of an executive board and there are no women on that board, you need to say, okay, how'd that happen? You know, and then once we start doing that, we can start to build a world where leadership gaps start closing.
So that call to action, so that book being written kind of spurred some of the directions you went, and you've been on this path for some time. So I'd like to take just a moment and maybe have you talk to the younger generation, the ones that are maybe still in college or still in those kind of in-between stages, haven't made it out to, you know, the workforce or things like that. And like, what kind of advice would you give them if this is a topic and a passion that they kind of want to pursue based on your experience so far?
That's a great question. And I think the first thing I want to say is that I want to talk to everyone, people, women, men, folks that don't identify as binary, trans folks, because this is a fight for everyone. We can be allies together in this. And I think something to do is that when you think about the companies that you're applying to, the people that you're working with, think about gender parity. When you choose, you know, your five people to work with in a group together because you think that they're the smartest folks in your class, in your business school class, let's say, and then they all end up being men, or they all, you know, or there's only, you know, one out of five is a woman. Think about that a little bit and question your own unconscious biases. And start to think about what would parity actually look like. Because we know, research has shown us that when men and women are both at the table, just as when a diverse backgrounds and races are represented at the table, the work is better.
No, I get it. And I feel like this is, we're making some progress, and at least we're having the discussion. So that's a big part, because at once, like, not too, you know, recent future, we didn't even have the discussions, in my opinion, in schools or really anywhere. It definitely wasn't mainstream.
Right. Exactly. And actually, a question I like to ask people is if they can look back on their own educational background. Do you remember any of the women who were mentioned in your history classes?
Probably the first one be like a Cleopatra, maybe like a Harriet Tubman, like probably the top 10. I probably remember the top 10.
Yeah. And actually, it's not Harriet Tubman, but another famous Black woman is the number one most mentioned woman in history curriculum in the United States.
Rosa Parks.
Rosa Parks. That is it. Yes.
I'm from Detroit.
Pardon?
I'm from Detroit.
Are you from Detroit? Okay. So she's the one who's mentioned the most. And I think Eleanor Roosevelt might be the second.
That was my other one that I was going to bring up too.
She wrote the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's an enormous contribution to world history. So we should probably know her name.
Yeah, absolutely. This is great. And I think this kind of tees up the book overall. So Woman, Gender, and Power is the title of the book. Tell us this a little bit more about, there's when you have an idea. So we know, you know, many people have ideas, many people, but to take that step, and I don't know this, by the way, but I see a lot of things hanging in the background. Some of that looks like it could be writing, as in you're working on the book. I don't know this. Okay. Okay, I don't want to be presumptuous. That could be other work, but I just know that when you go down the path of putting together a book, or when you any book, I don't care the thickness or anything, but when you put your heart into something, you put your heart into a work or anything, like, you're giving a piece of yourself. So that's not easy to do. Like, what kind of tipped the scales to where you're like, okay, I have to do this? And I'm asking this question because I know there's also people that are listening that are like, they've always wanted to do a book, and they're like, and they kind of hold back. Like, what helped you, like, tip the scales and be like, all right, I have to do this. I'm committing to this.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I think one of the things when that book that I was expecting to come into the mail didn't come, I sort of thought to myself, like, there is a gap on the bookshelf that needs to be filled. There needs to be this book that is for general audiences. It's accessible, right? Because, you know, feminism and women's history is doing fine in academic circles. Yeah. But there needs to be a book that's bringing that work from the universities out to a wider public. Because if anything shouldn't be, you know, caught up in academia and so complicated that regular folks can't really understand it, it's gender equity and women's equality.
Yeah. What are some of the, and I know there's many points, so I know that, but what are some of the things that you hope that your readers get out of this work?
Oh, that's a great
question. I know that's a big one, and I don't expect, there's only so much we can do in one interview, right? We could spend a whole lecture series on this, but, I know that, but, like, what are some of the things that, like, you hope that people walk away from?
Sure. I hope that people walk away with strategies, actually, that when they read about, for instance, the fact that in England in 1300, all the people who brewed beers, brewers or brewsters, were women.
What?
And then by the time it got to 1600, none of them are women. All of them are men. And that's because brewing, with the invention of hops, this is like a little, the invention of hops became a better commercial product. You could travel farther with it. Yeah. You could have a bigger company. Guilds started opening up to support brewing and teach, you know, sort of better recipes. Women were not allowed in the guilds. Whoa. Women could not travel far very safely. They could not get access to capital. So as soon as brewing became a good business, women were cut out of it.
Are you
kidding? A similar thing happened with the tech industry in the late 40s.
Wow. Unbelievable. Like, I'm blown away. I can't wait to read this. Like, all these stories and things. Like,
smiling. I mean, it's bad news.
Like, I just mean, like, systematic. And so this is, like, now when you think about history classes, when you think about things like this at various levels, you know, like, that's important. That's important to know. And then sometimes when people say, like, you know, we're fighting towards equality or this or that, or, like, there's all these assumptions sometimes that, like, that's just the way things evolved. What I think we rarely do is we look at, like, systematic issues, not just in, like when I say not just in policy, I mean, like, I don't mean, like, at the legislative level and it's affecting the whole country. I mean, something that's smaller like that. That was a decision that was made to basically control an industry and to systematically have one gender no longer participate, like, period.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that didn't naturally evolve like that. It's like that was taken. Like, that's a thing.
It didn't. And when you learn about the European Renaissance and the commercial revolution, you should be learning these things, because if we don't understand them, we just keep repeating these errors.
Wow, that's amazing. It's good. And it's great content. Like, and it's things that when you think about things like that, and you're reading it, and you're just like, wow, like, okay, now we have some empirical evidence. Now you're better equipped. Like, I'm better equipped. I didn't know that story until just now. And I know you have plenty more coming up. So I'm excited about the book, but I do want to get more information on that as time goes on. But I do want to spend some time about teach about women. So first off, tell us a little bit more about the company.
Sure. So very quickly, I realized that, okay, I wanted to write this history book, figure out ways to build a more equitable future using history. But I realized really quickly in talking to other people that it can't just be about history. It can't just be about the content we're teaching. It's also the ways that we're teaching. So for instance, globally, 67% of girls self-select out of high-level math and science classes before they are 15 years old.
Wow.
So it's happening really, really young. So we need to figure out not how to, you know, change girls to be more accepting of the way math and science are currently being taught, but rather we need to change the way that we teach math and science. So I spoke to, you know, a lot of really smart teachers. We're a team of 20 people now, and our mission is to make gender equity part of every aspect of school life, from curriculum to hiring policies, to sports policies, which is sometimes a kind of a low-hanging fruit. And in that way, we can really give students the skills and knowledge to close the gender leadership gap.
What age is this for? The younger age groups, or like give us a little bit more on that.
Sure. So we focus on K-12 schools. Mm-hmm. We've sort of noticed the data has borne out that by the time you get to university or even the workplace, we have programs for teachers who are teaching, you know, kindergarten and first grade. They can get certified as educators for gender equity, which means that they're learning not only some of the knowledge that we're talking about right now, but also some really concrete practices for kind of diffusing unconscious bias and all of the things that slowly but surely start solidifying gender stereotypes in young people's minds.
I think it's a great idea. And what I always look at, and this is getting back to, you know, some of the things in your book also, but like we have these assumptions sometimes that this is just the way things evolve. Like even our teaching, it's like, no, the teaching system, the hours, all that stuff, that's Industrial Revolution. That was specifically made for a moment in time that's pretty much past. And we're still operating in an old system. That was not that long ago. That system was invented and implemented for a specific reaction that I would argue, you know, it achieved to a certain extent, right? We are successful in the companies, in the country's growth. I'm not arguing whether or not, you know, people that participated did not benefit equally. And I'm not arguing it's the right way, but I'm just saying that it achieved some of what it was trying to accomplish. And now if it's time to move on to another system with new ideals and new values and with new expected outcomes, like it's okay. Like that's okay.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. And one of the things I tell folks when they get, I don't know, worried or defensive, is that it's very hard to stop doing certain things. You know, you can't just say, you know, stop, you know, no, very few teachers, I would say no teacher really, is trying to discourage a young woman from taking their science class.
No.
But there could be something going on there. So you don't want to think about what can I stop doing, but it's what can I start to do? How can I start to be really enthusiastic and kind of lead with joy and curiosity for the things that girls and young women are interested in, and show them that those things can live in math and science.
And it's all, to me, it goes back to some of those earlier things that you said too, though, is that you didn't say it's all intertwined, but it is. And the standpoint of like, when you said you look at that board and it's all, you know, males, or it's all this, even just, you know, if a woman or a little girl in this case is still in school, is being introduced to other people in the field that were women and have made a significant like that, just to even have that mindset of like, oh, I can do this too. Like those things, I mean, that's like, that can go a long way. So it's all intertwined in the way that we're doing it. So when people kind of get offensive or offended or kind of scared about it, it's like, no, I don't think anybody would argue, okay, we talk about Thomas Edison, so let's talk about the top women inventor. Like, I don't think anybody would argue that adding that would be like a bad thing, right? So, but adding that could make all the difference for inspiring another group of women entrepreneurs and inventors.
Exactly. And we would have a more nuanced understanding about how people become inventors, right? That it doesn't just happen. Thomas Edison didn't just wake up one day and become an inventor. You know, he was trained in a certain way. He had mentors. And once we understand his path to power and authority, we can open up those paths to more people.
No, that's great. Can you tell me a little bit more about, just as you've gone through, because you're an educator, as you've gone through and as you've kind of been working with your group. So as you mentioned, I believe you said you're 20 right now. So as you're working with your group and you're kind of going through curriculums or let's just say your ideal and your vision of what it would look, did you have any like pleasant surprises? Because I feel like when you work with lots of people that are all passionate and going the same thing, like new ideas come out, like new things come out. Like what kind of like pleasant surprises have you had?
Oh, 100%. I mean, one of the best things I would say, and this is another message for young people.
Yeah.
If you have an idea and you think it really feeds off of your own strength, go find other people who also think that's a good idea and who are kind of on the same path as you, because you can't have all the good ideas. You can't have, you know, my strengths are, you know, such as they are, but they're not, you know, across the board. And working with some people and seeing, for instance, one of the most important things in our certification program is it's an emotional and a community component that you can't just sort of tick the box on becoming somebody who supports gender equity. You actually need to build a community around supporting yourself in that. And to me, that sounded so much about what finally allowed me to keep exercising every day. When you have people who support you, you can really build something much, much stronger. And I think that has been a wonderful surprise every time we meet and every time we gather and put ideas out there.
That's great. And so what has been, so that's one side, of course, internally. What has been some of the feedback like externally that you've received? Like, has there been any kind of surprises there or any kind of like other things that you've seen so far?
Oh, sure. I mean, most people think they ask themselves, they're like, wait a minute, that's true. I didn't hear any women's names in my history classes. And then they start wondering, they're like, why on earth is that? You know, what happened? And I think the fact that people have responded so positively to the mission and believe so much that teaching about women is going to be vital to building a more equitable future has been a wonderful surprise. I think that sometimes you think, you know, I've got this great idea. Oh, no one's going to like it. But actually, this is something that really fits with our moment, because I think that almost anyone you talk to and pretty much everyone I've spoken with has said, of course, we want to do better by young people, especially young women. But they just don't have the steps to do so. They're not exactly sure about that roadmap. And to be able to provide that has been really wonderful.
Oh, that sounds great. And it sounds like you're building the community around it. And now I guess the next stage or what you're also doing is like the implementation side of things. So how do you, like, what's your vision for, and I know we know nothing happens overnight. That's a given, right? Especially when you're thinking about things like school systems, when you're thinking about things like
our vision back there,
it just doesn't. And, you know, but other things didn't happen that fast either. Right. So that's just the way it is. Anything that it has to be tested, like the ideas have to be tested, things have to, you know, gain traction. Like, it's a process. We're humans, right? So it is what it is on that one. But like, what's your vision? Like, how do we start like implementing this? And how do we start kind of moving the needle on things?
Sure. Well, we've started in New York City in the tri-state area, mostly with private and charter schools. But our goal is to start moving into public schools really across the country. Yeah. And we hope that by 2026, and I always say by the time I turn, 2026, by the time I turn 40, we will have educated 1 million students to champion gender equity. That is our goal. And we're on our way. Since July 1, I've been into 15 schools and impacted enough teachers that we've got about 5,000 students already just in the last like month or so. So I think we'll make it.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. I think it's a great idea. And I just think that you have that multiplying effect, right? You educate those 1 million women, like some of those women are going to be inspired to kind of carry the torch and to contribute and to keep doing and to support the mission, of course, and what you're overall doing. So I think it's amazing. How do people get involved? So like, how do people get involved with Teach About Women? On from all different levels, whether it's administrative, whether it's contributing, like how do people get involved?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you can go to our website, teachaboutwomen.org, where we have free programs for parents, teachers, and students. They can participate in our first ever Women's History Walkathon, which will be this spring in Central Park. We're going to visit all of the statues of different notable men and talk about some notable women who could have also been represented in those statues, and then end on the first ever statue of three women. Which is now in Central Park, which is huge. So that's some way that people can get involved. And we'd really like folks of all ages to do that. Yeah. The reason we're doing a walkathon is because we think it's something that you can bring your kids to and you can bring your grandma to. So you can knit hats for it, do anything like that. and, you know, on our website, if you think that gender equity should be part of every aspect of school life, you can make a donation or connect us with the K-12 schools in your community.
Why do you think like it's so important, like right now, like at this moment in time, for people to really pay attention to this and like what's going on in the, and especially with this age group.
Yeah, that's a great question. So looking back at history, there are these tipping point moments, these what I call moments of reckoning.
Yeah.
When the like sort of the lines of power get redrawn, and women can either be included in that or actively excluded. So for instance, the year 200, before the year 200, women were active leaders in Christian churches. Afterwards, no more, zero. So, you know, the Apostle Paul was writing to women who were running their own churches, but after the year 200, that became forbidden. So we are at, I believe, one of those gender reckoning moments. Mm-hmm. We have a female vice president, a biracial woman of color. That is a victory. But then it comes with these confusing contradictions. The COVID-19 crisis pushed 3 million women out of the workforce. Mm-hmm. So we need to figure out, what is it that we're going to do right now to make sure that roads are not closed to women, that power is not used against women, but rather roads are opened up and women are given the tools and the agency to use power and gain authority for themselves.
Man, it's amazing. It's good. And this story in your book too, like I need this book already. Like I need to be, no, I want to be educated and I don't know like the resources like this. And I'm just being upfront. Like, I don't know, like some of us that want to be educated and want to be involved, like, you know, we need your book.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. You know, when I was looking for it, I figured somebody must've written this. And the fact is there isn't really a good up to date one, and one that's really accessible and makes the story really compelling. Because it is a compelling story. Mm. And I think that's something that I'm really proud to be a part of and to use my skills for.
Is your writing style kind of approachable? Kind of like you talk, or like how would is it going to be really, is it going to be really academic? Like, because not to put you there, but I'm like, what level are you taking me back in school? Because if you're taking me to PhD level, I didn't get that one.
No. Read this, okay, I didn't get that far either. I don't have a PhD. No, it's funny. So one of the index cards up there has the three main words that I always try to keep in mind when I write a chapter. And they are story, place, and emotion. Mm. Because these things not only kind of activate our kind of human need to hear stories, but they also help you remember things better. They're all memory devices that folks use. So what I try to do is write in a way that feels accessible and memorable to really almost anybody.
Oh, that's amazing. Love it. First off, this has been great. I just have to ask the question. So what's next? I mean, you got a lot on your plate. You got a lot going on. Like, what's next for you? What's next for the mission?
That's a great question. Well, after we sign off, I guess I have to do my writing every day, 500 words. No, but seriously, we're coming out with some pilot programs. Mm-hmm. For US and global history. So we're going to get those into 5 schools by the end of January. And we're going to start piloting our certification program to certify educators for gender equity to get into about 25 schools by the end of the year.
Oh, that's amazing. This is great. I look forward to continuing to watch the progress. And man, I got to see if I can get permission to come to New York. This sounds amazing. I've never done a walkathon, number one. Number two, I haven't been to New York in years. I got to see if I can get permission for that one. So I might be in on this one. This sounds
Who are you
exciting.
Asking permission from?
Ah, the other co-founder. They don't let me leave the studio.
Oh.
Like the team, my team. You think I get to like run my own life? No, I get to the camera and ask questions.
I was going to say, just blink and we'll rescue you.
Thank you. Classic. So that being said, Georgina, first off, I knew this would be fun. It's been great. I learned a lot. I hope my audience did as well. I'm sure they did. If somebody is looking to connect and they want to learn more about Teach About Women or about the upcoming book or just follow your journey in general, I mean, what's the best way for people to do that?
Great question. So they can follow me on social media at Teach About Women. Mm-hmm. Or visit our website, teachaboutwomen.org, where we have a ton of free programs for students, parents, and teachers. And they can get involved in our walkathon, our Women's History Walkathon, happening this spring in Central Park. And if they believe that gender equity should be part of every aspect of school life, they can make a donation or connect us with the schools in their communities.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, just want to say again, Georgina, thank you for coming on the show. This has been a lot of fun. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. Hope you got a lot out of this, especially if you're a first-time listener. Don't forget, hit that subscribe button. We definitely want you to come back and be a return listener. We have many more mission-based entrepreneurs, executives, and experts coming on. We don't want you to miss a thing. And Georgina, again, it really has been a pleasure. And also, congrats again on getting married. So very happy for you.
Thank you. Thanks, Adam.